This Washington Post Live podcast is sponsored by Justice Action Network. Justice Action Network is the largest bipartisan organization working to reform the justice system at the federal level and across the country.
You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the Post's newsroom to life on stage.
With the fate of a major bipartisan criminal justice reform bill hanging in the balance on Capitol Hill, two of the bill's co-sponsors, Senators Dick Durbin and Chuck Grassley, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, joined the Washington Post on Tuesday, December 4th, to discuss the likelihood that Congress will move forward with a vote on the proposed law before the end of the year. Other speakers, including Governor Tom Wolf of Pennsylvania, as well as supporters and opponents of federal and state criminal justice reform measures, highlighted important debates around reform of mandatory minimum sentencing, the country's bail system, police-community relations, and other key issues on the nation's criminal justice agenda. In this segment, Pennsylvania elected officials, including Governor Tom Wolf, discuss steps they have taken to address the state's prison population and prevent recidivism. Let's listen.
Well, good morning. Thank you all for being here. I'm really pleased to be having this conversation. Welcome to the Washington Post and Post Live. This morning, I'm pleased to kick off our program with a conversation about Pennsylvania and the efforts it's taking to lead the nation in reform. I want to welcome the Secretary of Pennsylvania's Department of Corrections, John Watson, member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, Cheryl DeLozier, and the Governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf. Before we get started, I wanted to remind everyone, both here in the audience as well as if you're watching via live stream, that you can chip in your own questions. I mean, I've got plenty of my own, but if you want to weigh in, I happily will take yours. Let's get some difficult ones for these folks as well. And so you can send them to us using the hashtag PostLive. And so I want to jump right into the conversation because there's a ton to start about. And let's start with you, Governor Wolf. In June of this year, Pennsylvania became the first state in the country to automatically seal misdemeanor records with the signing of the Clean Slate Act. Was there a specific strategy behind starting the reform process with the Clean Slate Act? And can you talk a little bit about what the implications of the act are?
Well, I've been in politics now for a little less than 4 years, but Representative DeLozier really was one of the leaders in this. And Secretary Wetzel, who actually was in the administration before me, I held him over. He had to serve with me. They were really the leaders. I came out of a business background, and Clean Slate made so much sense to me because in my company, I found that hiring people with a criminal background actually was a good move. These, in most cases, turned out to be very, very good employees who wanted a second chance. And so Clean Slate legislation, as it was being proposed and moving through the legislature, made a lot of sense to me.
Of course. Representative DeLozier, you want to talk a little bit about what is in, what the Clean Slate legislation does? I know you were one of the primary sponsors of it.
Sure. Bringing the bill forward and the ability for us to get started on this issue, a lot of the advocacy groups came to us and talked about the plight, and we obviously have talked to the Secretary about those that are leaving prison, those that are going out into our communities. And sometimes it's not even prison. Sometimes the being a misdemeanor, because with the bill, we deal with, in Pennsylvania, one of the things that I learned is, we have three tiers of misdemeanors, one, two, and three, but many of our misdemeanor ones in many other states are considered felonies. Mm-hmm. So the bill concentrated on misdemeanor twos and threes definitely as a total clean slate, and misdemeanor ones are ones that are eligible, but possibly reviewed by a DA and by a judge, mainly because of the differentiation between other states surrounding us and everything as to what an M1 is. Versus a felony. So the ability and the conversation that we had was honestly having a lot of bringing both sides together. Because certainly when you start the conversation, certain groups would say, oh, well, we need to have felonies clean slated. Well, that wasn't going to be part of the compromise because we needed to do that and come to the middle. And many other people said, oh, well, why should we give anybody a second chance? So you had these divergent views that we needed to bring together. And I think that clean slate was a good compromise and something that was a good step and also will impact many thousands of people in Pennsylvania.
Certainly. You know, when I When I look and think about this legislation, I think about the idea of collateral consequences, right? Mm-hmm. When someone is incarcerated or convicted of a crime, the idea that even once they've paid their crime, perhaps the way our system is set up, there's a long-running consequence to that, even after they've paid their debt to society. Secretary Wetzel, can you talk a little bit about the ideas, both the collateral consequences and also recidivism, right? That the hope is that, I think we all hope, no matter our politics, that once someone has gone to prison, when they get out, they'll be able to not commit any additional crime and end up back in prison. How do steps like this, the Clean Slate Act, how does this make it easier to deal with something like recidivism and keep people from ending up back in prison?
Yeah, I mean, citizens don't benefit, excuse me, from putting a scarlet letter on someone from committing a crime. And if you look at the research, Al Bloomstein has done some work around, at some point, someone who's criminally involved is less likely to commit a crime than you or I. Mm-hmm. Not the governor, of course, but you or I. So from a public policy standpoint.
I mean, we can break some news.
There's a reason I work for two administrations here.
Thank you. Thank you for that vote of confidence.
I think it's reasonable for someone to have a path to redemption. And we benefit. When people get reintegrated into the community and can become good, productive citizens, we all benefit from that. So I don't know why, from a public policy standpoint, we would do things to inhibit their ability to be successful. And I think that's what a criminal record does. So this is a great first step. Hopefully we can continue to push the envelope more. I mean, we have in Pennsylvania, we have a min-max sentencing scheme. To me, it makes a lot of sense that we would sentence someone to a finite period after which their record is sealed. So this was a great first step in that. But I think we benefit from helping people be successful if that's the goal of the criminal justice system.
And just to add to that is a sense that with the bill, it's 10 years. It's 10 years without any interaction with police. Mm-hmm. And as to the individuals, you know, there are exclusions. It's not a sexual crime. It's not a violent crime. It's not a crime with a gun. You know, there are exclusions. So we're dealing with individuals that made a stupid mistake. They had a bad night. And while not condoning the action, the bottom line is still a matter of, should that implicate the problem of not getting a job or not getting housing for the rest of their life? Mm-hmm. And we're dealing with individuals that have moved on from that stupid night or from that incident, and they're now parents. They have children that they're supporting. They have families that they want to have a good life. And this blemish on their record as a misdemeanor is impacting them many, many years afterwards. So I think it was a good step because we moved from perpetuity of it never happening to 10 years, basically letting them prove themselves that they are good citizens, they made a mistake, and they deserve that second chance.
Certainly. Now, Governor, as the Secretary talked, he used the words first step over and over and over again. This was a good first step. You have since talked about kind of a multi-pronged package of other reforms, whether it be sentencing reform or pretrial reform. What are some of the other steps you would like to see Pennsylvania take, and which of them do you think are most realistic politically, and which ones are you worried there might be some difficulty with?
Well, I think there's broad bipartisan support for making sure this is just the first step, that we do have a lot of things to do to make sure that we're reducing our recidivism rate, that we are actually reintegrating folks back into the family life, into our economy. So there are other things I think we ought to do. I think we can do some expansion of Clean Slate. And the representative talked about some of the things we might do. I think we should do things with sentencing guidelines. Person who was really in favor 20 years ago in Pennsylvania of mandatory minimum sentences and was really strict has had a conversion. And a Republican state senator who is really passionate about changing this and moving away from what he thought was right 20 years ago. We need to have bail bond reform. Meek Mill is a poster child for probation reform. Pennsylvania is one of the few states without a cap. Even Texas has a cap on the amount of time that you can be liable for probation. We need to do everything we can to, I think, make sure that everybody understands our criminal justice system is in fact just mm-hmm. and fair for everybody, and we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can to get people back into the economy, back into family life, back into our communities as seamlessly as possible. So we have a lot of work to do.
Certainly. Representative, do you, as we talk about this, some of these things seem like there would be some broad bipartisan consensus for. There are others that I could imagine there would be some Republican, at least, hesitation about or potentially pushback. Are there areas that you think might be difficult? And what types of additional reforms might you support?
I think that, as I talked about, these are misdemeanors from the Clean Slate that we made that step. I think once you go into felonies, Personally, I will have more of a concern, and mainly because I had some concerns over some of the M1s, because taking a look at that type of crime, it is a premeditated, thought-out crime. And so that's when people kind of take that step back and say, this person contemplated doing this and made a bad choice. Do they absolutely need the ability to get a good job? Do they need that training once they come out of jail or prison? Absolutely. But I think the pushback is going to be having that conversation as to where is that fine line as to someone who intentionally went out to harm. And I would bring up the issue of where I'm going to come from as well is the fact of where is the victim's voice in all of this. Mm-hmm. I absolutely support the fact that we don't want people going back into our prison system, and our system should be just. But what I would also say is the fact that the perpetrator of the crime hurt someone in most cases, if it's a person crime. The ability for us to say, what about the victim's voice? Where do they, you know, they may be irreparably harmed. Maybe someone was murdered. Maybe somebody was raped. Where is their voice in this as well? So I think that's going to be some of the pushback as to the fact of making sure that we don't sit there and the system goes totally to the side of the perpetrator and forget about the victim of that crime whenever it happened.
Certainly. I think the nice thing, though, is that there'll be all kinds of conversations about, you know, where we go with this. But we have a broad agreement that we really want to get people out of jail,
right,
back Absolutely. Into our communities, back into the economy.
And I think that is something that is a good starting point because, and as with any policy, and that's why I enjoy policy, because you see the far right and you see the far left of a conversation and you figure out where the middle is for good public policy. And any bill that goes through, and I've always said this, in anything that we have passed or any governor has signed into law, if both sides come out a little kind of irritated with something, that means they both gave a little, and it's probably a good bill.
So the governor, she said she likes irritating you.
Is that what I got?
It was interesting that you mentioned, because that is one of the questions, right? The clean slate is a question of, all right, do you expand this potentially to felonies? And it speaks kind of broadly to where this conversation is going and even where it is now. Even in Pennsylvania, a state that now has thousands fewer inmates than it did even just a few years ago, but on a kind of the leading edge of deincarceration, we do hit a point where you can only deincarcerate so much before you start really having to grapple with what do you do with people who've been convicted of violent crimes, of crimes with real victims, or that might have been premeditated. And it speaks to, I mean, even as you kind of sussed out and talked through your thinking on that, it speaks to where this conversation is going and how it's likely to get possibly even more difficult because of those
elements. I mean, that's why I think data has to drive the day. And I think it's really important how you frame these conversations. I know when we started, Governor Wolf kicked off our Justice Reinvestment Initiative in 2015. The framing was, look, we need to get better outcomes. Mm-hmm. We need to have people come out of prison less likely to commit a crime than when they came in. Implicit in that is putting the right people in prison for the right dosage for the right amount of time. But he also set the parameters that everything would be measured off two things, less crime and less victims. So you have to have everyone's voice around the table, including victims. But the reality of you know, we often talk about victims and perpetrators. We come from the same communities, and oftentimes the same family members and those kinds of things. So if we frame the conversation and we focus on data, I mean, look at the data under Governor Wolf. We have almost 3,500 less inmates. From the day he started to now. Index crimes are down. Violent crimes are down slightly. And we have less crime. So less crime means less victims, less inmates, less prisons, less spending. I mean, what's wrong with that, right? So we can find, if we look at things through a political lens, and we're in D.C., so there's your best evidence, you never get anything done. If we wrap solutions around problems, and we take away the philosophical lenses we like to look things through and just look at outcomes, we have no choice but to continue to reform our system because our outcomes are not good.
Certainly. What do you think, to follow up on that, what do you think is the most pressing issue still in Pennsylvania? If you could magic wand tomorrow convince all these politicians, you know, you said it wasn't about politics, but if tomorrow as someone leading the Department of Corrections, if there was one thing you could have tomorrow, what would it be?
Yeah, I think we still have some work to do around sentencing reform and right-sizing our prison population. And again, look, so we're in the midst of a huge opioid epidemic that everybody cares about. Mm-hmm. It's been a big issue for the General Assembly, been a big issue from the governor. The reality of the people who are coming in prison today, we've seen a doubling of the amount of individuals coming in from opioids, from 6% of our new commits to 12% of our new commits. The profile of these individuals are someone who do not have a long criminal history, committed a bunch of crimes in a relatively short period of time, and because of the number of crimes, they're coming to state prison. They do not benefit. We do not benefit from them coming to state prison. If we don't address the addiction, they're just going to be older and angrier and still addicted, right? So they're likely to commit another crime. But we can divert them and put them into treatment infrastructure and address that root cause of the crime without putting them in state prison at $42,000 a year. So I think just from a financial standpoint, we got to make good decisions. If someone who is low risk, like the person I described or the people who we're seeing come in the system now, are relatively low risk, they got addicted and committed a bunch of crimes, they're going to come out worse, the state prison. Nobody benefits from that. So I think it's that kind of stuff. Like if we all agree that we have a serious opioid epidemic and we agree that treatment works and there's things we can do, yes, holding some criminal justice consequences over someone's head, absolutely appropriate. But putting them on the right step of the corrections continuum, so the step that's most likely to get them out of a life of crime is what we have to do. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of sentencing reform and some of the conversation around that, we're having this conversation at a time when our elected officials just a few miles down the road, not even a few miles down the road, are debating a bipartisan criminal justice bill to deal with some of our federal incarceration rates. Governor, what role, you know, the President of the United States has come out and said he supports this legislation. There are some questions about how much he is doing to support it. But what message do you think that sends, and do you think it's important that the president has kind of weighed in support of that legislation, and do you think the federal government should be doing more as it relates to this type of reform?
Yeah, no, I think any leader who wants to weigh in support of reform here is a good thing. And again, as I think we all believe, we're trying to do the right thing by the citizens of Pennsylvania, and by the people who are incarcerated. We want justice. People who commit a crime should be punished. The punishment should be appropriate to the crime, and it should be appropriate for what the needs of society are. So we have a lot of good things that can come out of this. I think what we need to stop doing is conflating criminal justice and punishment and being really tough on crime as something that's just going to solve all our problems. It's become an ideological thing. We need to look at it practically. We need to look at the data and say, we can have a better society. We can have a better society all around if we do this right. And that's what we're trying to do in Pennsylvania.
And some of the bills that have gone into play have taken steps in order to make our justice system different. Mm-hmm. Body cam with police and having, so you know, you have a third eye in a situation, you know what happened in that situation, and that protects both individuals as well as police, as well as post-DNA, you know, conviction, the ability for folks to challenge if they for their innocence, as well as the flip side of that, with the bill that went through that was signed into law, the ability for us to collect DNA in order to close cold cases, and again, get that justice for the victims, as well as the fact of have the right person in jail and not have somebody that's in jail that's wrong, and we can be proven and can be proven by DNA. So we've been able to pass laws, and the governor has signed them in order to make our Pennsylvania system changes. And I think that a lot of that, and as well as others that are in the pipeline that maybe didn't make it to the governor's desk this last session, we can continue to push and get that compromise to get it there.
Sir, it strikes me that you guys are doing so much in Pennsylvania, and Governor, as you talk, you know, you're saying that you appreciate that any elected official from the president on down doing this is a good thing. Someone who's written about this for several years, sometimes it is even a little perplexing to me that we're still having the same conversation about the same bill from maybe a few years ago. I mean, do you ever, as the governor of Pennsylvania, want to just call Mitch McConnell and say, hey, call for the vote? I mean, do you have any frustration with where this is at a federal level compared to the work you guys are doing at a state level?
Yeah, I do. And I think sometimes it takes someone coming in from the outside. I mean, again, I've been in politics for 4 years. You come in from the outside and you sort of say, let's take a rational, logical look at this. What is the right thing to do here? And I think we can, with some disagreements on means, but we can have a broad agreement about the ends, and we can take it out of that ideological, I think, box it's been trapped in for so long in places like Washington.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the federal government has done some really good things around criminal justice reform. I mean, Second Chance Act is, this is the 10th year anniversary of Second Chance Act, really investing and starting reentry. Justice reinvestment, which we've benefited from, a relatively small federal investment, allows states to become data-driven and make good policies and reduce their population. This First Step Act that we're talking to, it baffles me. I mean, there is broad support on both sides. It baffles me the impact that one or two people can have in holding up good policy, evidence base that's likely to get outcomes in a system that's struggling. You know, when you talk about some of the things in the provisions of the First Step Act, where you're talking about relatively, meager sentencing reform stuff and a lot of improving the federal prison system to include risk assessment, which has been around forever. And we should be doing that, and improving programs and incentivizing programs. These are all things that will lead people to be less likely to commit a crime. And that's what the focus has to be on.
Certainly. I asked you a version of this question, but Molly on Twitter asked it even better, and so I'm gonna defer to her. If there was one thing that each of you could do tomorrow to change the criminal justice system for the better, what would it be?
Who do you want to start with?
Well, who's got a good answer?
I'll start.
We'll work our way this way.
I would fully fund high-quality early childhood education. Yeah. It's very simple. The reality is you get great outcomes. If you get a kid reading at grade level by third grade, they're likely to graduate. We know kids who drop out of school are more likely to be incarcerated. We know, we did a study in 2014 in Pennsylvania, young black kid who drops out of school, 70% lifetime likelihood of being incarcerated. So if you really want to improve criminal justice outcomes, improve education, and it's very simple. The problem is, what we talk about with early childhood education is cost avoidance 16 years from now. And in a political environment where we never want to raise taxes and we really want to watch every cent, it's difficult to sell fully funding high quality early childhood education.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just want to piggyback on that. I think education from infant and toddler up through higher education, we need to do a good job there. In any limited government, market economy, if we don't invest wisely there, we're going to pay for it in incarceration. So Pennsylvania, I think, is working on that. But I agree with John. If we did a good job in education, that would take care of a lot of our criminal justice issues.
I mean, 40% of new commits to us don't have a high school diploma. That's not complicated math to do, right?
That's a big number, yeah. And I would say on two sides of this, one of the issues that I've been trying to push on the victim side of it is the ability for them to be made whole with restitution and being paid back for a crime that was committed against them. So that's something that I've worked on before and will continue to work on. But the other side of it is also, we had talked about with probation and parole and the system and talking to many of the people in Pennsylvania that perform these jobs for the folks that are out. And they are overwhelmed. Keeping track of individuals, they have very big caseloads. And I know we've talked about this in many hearings that we've had and everything else. But I also believe taking a look at the post, what does happen when the inmate comes out? Who is overseeing them? How can we guide them better? How can we give them better opportunities in that regard? And our probation and parole officers, and they have a very big caseload. So I also think at taking a look at that, and whether it's more probation and parole officers necessarily, I don't know the exact answer, and you might have more to say on that, but it's the ability to say, how can we make the person coming out have the best support system from the state to make sure that they make the right choices, hopefully. I mean, they obviously make the choices in the end, but give them what is necessary, the best direction, so that they can start their lives and hopefully become part of the community and not go back and visit one of your prisons.
Well, the governor talked about this earlier with abbreviating probation and parole length. We have extraordinary long probation and parole length. You know, someone who's in the community for 5 years, highly unlikely to come back. So is there, does it make sense from a financial standpoint, from a caseload standpoint, to supervise them like they just got out of prison a day ago when they're out for 6, 7, 8, 9 years? So I think it's never either or, it's always both and. I mean, I think there's looking at who's on probation for how long, and being reasonable about wrapping supports and identifying folks who are going down a bad road and take more of a supportive, plug them into treatment before they need to come to jail kind of approach.
Certainly. Before we wrap up, I've got one more question for the governor. The you know, we have this conversation at a moment when Pennsylvania is as important as it ever is in our big electoral politics. We're coming out of a midterm election where I think a lot of Democrats are excited by how many votes you got, as well as some other folks. You're not that excited?
I'm excited. I liked it.
He'll take it. He'll take
it. And so it strikes me that you all are on the leading edge of this on an issue that many people still fear could be demagogued, right? We are, even in the last few days, many of us here have been thinking back to the old Willie Horton ads, in part because of the passing of former President George H.W. Bush. What do you think some of the political messages that you as a governor can take steps like this, can work with Republican colleagues to make these real reforms in a system and still be, by the measures I've seen, a relatively popular elected official?
I think Pennsylvania, and I'm selling here, is a very common sense commonwealth. And I think what we're doing here, working across the aisle, is very common sense. I mean, there are things on the prevention side, as John and I talked about, in education. And there are things on the criminal justice side to make sure our system of corrections and working at the back end of this are working better. But I think all of us in Pennsylvania are taking a common sense approach, not an ideological approach. What is the best way to do this? And I think common sense actually works.
And you think that could resonate nationally? Do you think other states could follow
I sure hope so.
And when you're at the polls, you hear time and time again, I mean, all of us will hear that, any elected official, is I'm so tired of the nasty politics. I'm so tired of the combativeness. I'm so tired of the divisiveness of Republicans and Democrats and everything else. And so I do think that resonates. I do think that the ability for us to say, look, this, especially with Clean Slate, this was bipartisan. This was the Chambers of Commerce, law enforcement, the ACLU, the, you know, all these groups that typically are not on the same slate. And not on the same team, all coming together. And so I think that also can be a selling point for, like you're saying, not being go down the rabbit hole kind of thing, because so many different groups come together in support of this.
We need to figure out how to repackage it, because in most other contexts, what we did in Pennsylvania would have been packaged as very radical legislation. The way we did it was very common sense.
Of course. So that common sense approach, that conversation, that does sound like a message that a lot of voters, whether it be in Pennsylvania or where I'm from in Ohio, find attractive. The idea that it's not about this kind of partisan bickering or warring. Is there a message for our national politicians, for our federal politicians, to take from both the way you guys have packaged and the way you guys have had these conversations?
It's wrap solutions around problems. That's it. Forget about the right, the left. Wrap solutions around problems.
Yeah. Have the conversation. I mean, truly, sit down at a table, and a lot of times people, it's great to be in front of a microphone and spout off the talking points of the right or the left. But the ability to actually sit down at a table and say, what is it that you want to accomplish and how can we go about doing it? I think you have more, you just have to have that conversation and the starting point. Figure out what the problem is, figure out what the options are for solutions, and have that conversation. And a lot of times people don't even want to take that first step to have the conversation, mm-hmm. because they just figure it's a non-starter.
That's actually what Democratic politics, with a small d, Democratic politics, is supposed to be about, where we have conversations, we have disagreements, we have we work through those and get to public policies that actually work.
Of course. Well, unfortunately, we've got to wrap this great conversation. We could have it all day, but we've got another great panel coming up right afterwards. And so if we could have a quick round of applause for all of our great guests right now.
Thanks for listening. To hear more interviews from this series and other Washington Post Live programs, visit us at WashingtonPostLive.com.